copyright for books.
Oh, well, the copyright on anything that is written by an individual, not as an employee, not as a job, is will last until in the U.S. until 70 years after the author's death.
And you would change that to 10?
10 years from the date of publication.
I know you've heard about it, everybody else has the big deal that Google is trying to amass this library, an electronic library of all the books they can possibly copy. And they're getting a lot of heat flack from every corner. What do you think? First of all, Art, what side are you on?
I'm not on either side of that. Because from my point of view, what we really need is to have all those books, except the ones published in the last 10 years, available on the net for people to copy. And if there are two sides and neither one will do this, then I don't see why I should be go to bat for either one.
It sounds like the Google side wants to put every book on.
Well, they might want to, but they can't. They're not allowed to. I don't understand. I'm for allowing those books to be scanned and put on the net. But that's not what Google's really going to do. Because they're not allowed to, because the books are copyrighted.
Yeah, but it sounds like they're not allowed to, but it's still available and still in courts.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if they manage to do that, then I'd be all for it, but that's not my impression of what they'd actually do. Green shirt.
Yeah. So if you limit to 10 years to publication, or since after publication, what's to keep a publisher from republishing a book, you know, change a few words or a page order or something?
I don't understand. There must be a misunderstanding there, because the first version will go into the public domain 10 years after it was published.
So it does the approval. Yeah, I'm taking this under.
I have a question. What's your opinion on the Creative Commons license?
That's a misunderstanding. There's no such thing as the Creative Commons license. Creative Commons is an organization that presents several different licenses which do very different things. For instance, there's one that permits only non-commercial redistribution of exact copies. There are two of them that are free licenses. One of them is copyleft and the other is not. So these licenses are very different. However, all of them are, in my opinion, okay to use for art. So I support Creative Commons. But it's very important to recognize that different Creative Commons licenses are more similar than different. If a person says, let's write something and publish it under a Creative Commons license, that means he hasn't made a clear proposal. You need to pin him down before you participate. And of course, if he says, let's publish it under the Creative Commons license, he's really confused and you need to straighten him out.
Can we help if you repeat the question?
Okay. That question was, what do I think of the Creative Commons license?
How about self-publishing?
Well, you said, what do I think of publishing something yourself? Well, I've got nothing against it, but that doesn't alter, for me, the questions of what ethically other people should be free to do. Those are different questions. You can take nasty publishers out of the equation that way by publishing it yourself, but that doesn't eliminate the question of what should other people be allowed to do with their copies. I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
There are three different levels of copyright.
They're not three. There are three categories of works.
Three categories of works and the different ways that they would be copyrighted. I see possible motivations for the other two, for the authors to create those works, for artistic and for testimonial. What motivation would lie other than pure humanistic goodness, for the knowledge to create a work that would be purely functional, say a repair guide for a car's motor, if there was no copyright protection at all?
Well, we can ask, you're just saying, you're just making the assumption, a narrow assumption about human nature, and you're asking, why would anybody make functional works if they couldn't restrict the users? But the real question we should ask is, why do people make so many functional works and not restrict the users? So, for instance, why do people develop free software? There are so many people developing free software. What are their motives? Well, I've seen several motives. One motive is political idealism, fighting for freedom. Now, that's an important motive for me, but many contributors don't even agree with that idea, and they still do it. Another motive is fun. Writing software, programming is tremendous fun, especially when you're in control of what you do. And I'm sure this is a motive that is felt by every contributor. Another motive is to be appreciated and admired by other people. If you write a free program and a lot of people like it, a lot of people will express appreciation to you, and that feels really good. Another motive is to get a professional reputation as a capable programmer. Another motive is gratitude. If you've been using free software and appreciating it for years, then when you write a program that's useful for others, that's an opportunity for you to pay forward what you owe to the community. Another motive is hatred for Microsoft. Now, I think that's a somewhat foolish motive, because Microsoft, it's a mistake to single out Microsoft. Microsoft is just one developer of proprietary software that subjugates the user. There are lots of others, and they're all doing something wrong. So I think that those who focus solely on Microsoft are making a mistake, and that mistake is likely to lead them to excuse others who are doing the same nasty thing. But nonetheless, it's a fact that that's a motive. And another motive is money. In fact, a considerable number of people are paid to develop free software. So, in fact, there are lots of motives. It's a naive, false picture of human nature that leads people to imagine that people are nothing but calculating and selfish and never do anything for any other purpose. The first thing every writer wants is for people to read her work. Now look at Wikipedia. And why do people contribute to Wikipedia? Well, a few of them are getting paid to sabotage it, but most people are just enjoying contributing. They know they're building something good. Do I know any instances of local or state government resisting national copyright law? No, I don't.
I'd just like to say, I was going to make this comment earlier, but in light of that question, it seems kind of relevant. Right now, I have 5 CDs checked out from the Santa Cruz Public Library. None of them are DRM.
Well, so the Santa Cruz Public Library is lending audio CDs, and that's good. The problem I was talking about was audio books, not music CDs.
One of the ones that I got in that respect actually was a Berlitz language book.
Interesting.
Well, SCTL is also with the library that first told John Ashcroft to go take a flight to add a rolling donut.
Really? What did they do?
Oh, well, Ashcroft is one of the names of people who borrow books and also the list of the books they borrow. And SCTL essentially told them.
Good, yeah, that's important. Libraries should stop keeping records of who borrowed what books.
I would like to add another motive for the first category, the functional. Liberative, which is to say, one of the things that resonates here for me is the Buddha taught, and it's accepted in Buddhism, you want to go spread the Dharma, that's great. don't charge for it. And that's a really fundamental premise of Buddhism, and it's worked very well. People have survived for thousands of years because people give for that. Now, I wrote a dissertation on Tibetan Buddhism, and I'm posting it on my website so people can download it. But I'm also a writer trying to make a movie in Hollywood. Now, Hollywood stole that. We approached them, and it was taken and dumbed down. Somebody took it. Now, I like folk art, okay, and you can change art and make it better. But when you take something and you dumb it down, you make it worse. The question is, for that third category, as a writer, right, I would like to see my work protected. Where it's a fine line. So commercially, okay, I can live with that compromised copyright solution. But what would be your solution there as an artist who's had their stuff ripped off and
Unfortunately, I won't be able to repeat this question. It's too long and sad because it was an interesting. You said some interesting things, and I wish. I hope that we got them recorded to some extent. I don't think there is one. Basically, we can't say nobody can ever change other works of art because that's too important in the long term for art. But on the other hand, some of what you're doing may be documentary, that is to say, works of your own opinion or your testimony, and that's a different kettle of fish.
It becomes tricky when the categories get blurred because there is a testimonial aspect to it.
Well, actually, I don't think that works that straddle the boundaries are a problem. And the reason is, since the people who make the work decide what goes in it, if they make it straddle the boundary, it'll be treated as whatever would be the least restrictive to the public. And if they didn't want that, they shouldn't have put it on the boundary. They could have split it up, for instance, into two parts. You know, part of it is testimony and part of it is art. Well, make some testimony and then that'll be treated as testimony. And then make some art and that'll be treated as art. If a video game is part software and part art, well, split it up, and then the art will be treated like art and not like software.
I self-published a book back in the 90s, and I did it through the Library of Congress. Is that a good way to do it?
He said he self-published a book and he did it through the Library of Congress. I think there's a misunderstanding. The Library of Congress won't sell your book. What it will do is let you register the copyright.
Yeah.
Now, registering a copyright is important in the U.S. for being in a better position to enforce the copyright. You know, the Free Software Foundation registers copyrights. We do that so we'll be in a stronger legal position if somebody violates the GNU General Public License on some of the FSF copyrighted software, which means basically denying other people the freedom they're supposed to have, and so we can go to court and make them stop. So we register copyrights. It may be a good idea for you, but that's just a detail, because that doesn't really affect the question of how the book is going to be distributed under your activities.
I was wondering about the copyright to protect it.
Well, yeah, in the U.S., if you're thinking of actually enforcing your copyright, it's probably a good idea to register it.
How long is it good for?
Oh, I've already been telling you, it lasts much, much too long. Copyright in the U.S. lasts until the author's death plus 70 years. Or if it's done as a commercial job, then the copyright lasts 95 years. It's ridiculous.
So I gotta die first?
So do your ideas for copyright law also extend to patented ideas?
No. Patent law and copyright law have essentially almost nothing in common. The only thing they have in common is that one sentence in the Constitution. Everything else is totally different. So copyright law and patent law do different things, and you should never expect them to be similar at all. Now, why would anyone ever suppose that they were some more? Probably because they've been led astray by a confusing propaganda term, quote, intellectual property, unquote. Now, that term obviously is biased. The bias comes from the word property. But it's also confusing because it lumps together laws that work totally differently and do different things and raise different issues. You can't understand them if you lump them together. If you try to treat patents and copyrights as one thing, you're already so confused you won't understand either one. So the first step is reject and forget the term intellectual property, denounce it, never use it, object to it every time anybody else uses it, and treat each of these laws as a different subject. That way you have a chance of understanding them. What I'm saying has nothing to do with patent law. Nothing.
I have a statement and then a question. I have no interest in my uncle's songs. He wrote over 300 songs for the movies. And in 1930, he wrote his first song, Time on My Hands, which was said in the opening of your speech. And with Vince Humans, who wrote T for Two, or apparently T for One.
Actually, the song I'm referring to is Brother, Can You Spare a Dime?
But he died in 1980. My point, I have no interest in those songs in this state. But he died in 1980, and he'll get money until the year 2030. Because of the 1978.
Oh no, much longer than that. It's now 70 years, so he'll get his estate will get money until 2050.
I don't see it, so I don't have that.
I can't hear you.
What? That's only things written after 1976.
President. I don't think so. That's not what I've seen.
Well, I remember this. He died right after they passed the law of 78, I believe, and it was 50 years after the death.
Right, but it was extended by the Mickey Mouse Copyright Act by 20 more years.
And then I didn't hear you mention the fair use privilege under the...
Fair use is a different subject.
Okay, and then if you're writing... I published 19 books by myself on conspiracy about Bush Sr. and the JFK assassination and other people. And instead of... I couldn't find a publisher, so I had to do it since 1996, I've been self-publishing my books, and I was intimidated by certain people, so I wrote a will that if anything happens to me, that my books will go to the public domain. And I did that because that way it stops the CIA from trying to intimidate me, but now I gotta worry about the conspiracy books that want the material.
Right, yeah, we're gonna have to kill you. you should just put it on our website for freedom to redistribute.
Can I plug the website?
Yeah.
CIAJFK.com.
And so what point is when you, so the text is on your website and does it carry
us? I sell it on CD, which can I copyright it on CD.
No, but so you don't put the text on your website?
I put it in just a brief.
Why not put the text on your website? How much money do you actually get from this?
I've done it on my own, and I put $200,000 into it, and I spent 15 years going around the country, partly, and putting it together. There are 14 volumes. Leon Panetta supported the research in 1992, and as a former whistleblower, President Bush, Clinton, covered it up. But even though Leon Panetta supported it in 1992 as a congressman, and so has Sam Farr. But as a whistleblower, during the 90s, the government was spending millions of dollars under the whistleblower to get a JFK Records Review Board Act to find out the truth about JFK's assassination. And so that was my example to share, is that, you know, I consider it a life estate. I just appreciate what I get from when I'm alive. And when I'm gone, then it's a public
carry on. Well, I think it's a shame to restrict it while you're alive. Well, and it's self-defeating as well.
I've got 15 years of my life into it.
And don't you want it to have a lot of effect? I've put even more years of my life into developing the GNU system. And the reason why that's important, why it's an important contribution, is precisely that I let other people share in changing. In this case, this is not something I would suggest allowing other people to change, because this is your theory. This is not a functional work. This is
a lot of facts. I mean, I went to the libraries all over the country, hitting all the libraries in the country. That's why I just gave the website, because it's too much to say right at this moment.
But the thing is, I think that you absolutely should post the test. Because
the e-books that you were talking about sounded interesting, and I thought maybe that would be a good way to...
That's horrible. It sounds like you have ignored what I've said. You've just seized on the evil things that I've mentioned, and now you want to do them. That makes me really regret having given this speech at all. Well, boy, what? How am I going to feel now? I gave a speech about the danger of e-books, and the result was that somebody wants to go publish restricted e-books, which I'll never read, therefore.
I just thought I'd throw a couple examples out there. And the Supreme Court has a guideline for fair use, and that is...
Fair use has nothing to do with this issue. It's an important issue, but it's a different one.
I was just... Addressing that guy's question comes up in, is it the same thing, is that you can use copyrighted films in just short periods and flip them.
No, he wasn't talking about that. That's not what he was talking about at all. No, it's misunderstanding. His issue was totally different.
Well, you mentioned the documentary.
I know, but he was... You didn't understand. He was talking about some totally different issue.
Are there any kinds of functional works, subcategories, maybe of functional works that might not be as encouraged by the limitations of those earlier that apply?
I don't know, but it's intolerable for functional works not to be free, and I don't think that, you know, that question starts from an implicit assumption that we want these functional works to be developed whether they're free or not. And I don't agree with that assumption. I don't want them developed if they're not free.
Well, I want them developed, first of all.
I don't want, for instance, non-free software to be developed.
I want the functional works to be developed.
All right, I don't. I only want them developed if they respect my freedom. If they're offered to me only on the condition I give up my freedom, then as far as I'm concerned, they're just attractive nuisances. And I don't want them developed in that case.
So they impinge upon the possibility of free alternatives?
I mean, they may, or they may sap the motivation to make a free one. And I'd rather wait until somebody else wants to and is in a position to do one and make it free.
Is there a possibility that someone may not be motivated to create a particular kind of functional work?
I don't know, but when you ask that, why does it matter? Of course, under any system, there are works that someone might have made that nobody makes. That's true with our current system, and it would be true under a different system. But why do you ask about it? I mean, I told you what my guess is. You want these works to be developed whether they're free or not.
No,
I think you said. Oh, you don't? Okay, well, tell me what you do think. I don't want to get...
Is there the possibility of a class of functional works that may actually disappear, may evaporate for lack of motivation?
Yeah, it's possible. But it's not good to have them made and not be free, so
well,
I don't miss
it. System, when you're aware to the surges,
sorry, for free is a misunderstanding. I'm not talking about making anything for free. I'm talking about making it free, meaning that the users have the four freedoms. No, I'm not talking about that at all. When I say that these works should be free, I'm not talking about money. I'm not talking about price. I'm not talking about acquisition. I'm talking about freedom of users when they have the work. At the beginning, I mentioned the four freedoms which define what makes a program or another work free. It's what you're free to do with the work once you have a copy. That's what makes it an ethical issue. Paying money to get it is not really an ethical issue in most cases. You know, unless there's something that everybody's got to have, including poor people. And there are such cases, but there are exceptions. And aside from them, I don't think there is an ethical issue about the payment, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about freedom for people who have the work and use it.
To share.
To modify and share, and yeah.
Applications
for acquisition. Well, it may, but the freedom is more important than the acquisition. And the work is not a contribution to society if it tramples the user's freedom. And I'm perfectly happy that, given the choice between it gets developed and it's non-free, or it doesn't get developed, my choice is it doesn't get developed. Because non-free software and other functional works attack our freedom. They attack society.
I think the gentleman might be alluding to the fact that the authors of these would develop good stuff if they could get some compensation for it for a certain.
Well, yeah, sometimes it will happen and sometimes it won't. What's the problem? That's true now, too.
You're only addressing copyright. You could still get compensated under patent law.
No, not the.
For some software, you can.
Oh, but please, you're mixing up different issues.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm here to talk about things other than software, and there are no patents for those. You know, there's no patents on the content of artworks. You know, there's no patents on essay, on what you can say in an essay. There are no patents on applying to reference works either. Only in software, and software patents are an absurd, dangerous system that should be abolished. But it's a totally different issue.
Right,
anyone you no, I don't think so. I don't think what he's saying has anything to do with that. Are you talking about patents?
No.
I didn't think so.
No.
He's not. It's not what he's talking about. you confirmed. I'm right. That's not what you're talking about. No. Implicitly, what he's saying is, well, if there's some areas of functional works that people won't make unless the users are subjugated, shouldn't that justify subjugating the users? And my answer is no. And I think that it's an exaggeration to present it as an all or nothing thing. I don't think there are any categories which won't be developed, but there might be fewer of them developed, and we might have to wait longer, or we might have to organize somehow to fund the development if we really want it, and there are various ways of doing that too. The U.S. government has supported making lots of useful publications. And, okay, so maybe those were things that wouldn't have got written and wouldn't have been available to people otherwise. So we found a way to make them get developed. We came up with money. We paid people. Good. We did that, and we didn't have to subjugate the public, the users of the work, to get it done. I think that's a much better way of. So if we see that there's a gap, if we feel, okay, there are not enough works of this sort being developed and we'd like to have to encourage more, there are other ways we can do that.
I'm generally an advocate of sharing, but in discussion with certain people of certain economic mindset, I don't have an answer for them when they talk about the possibility of lack of motivation.
Yeah, my answer is that's not enough to justify subjugating the users of a work.
Hey, I've heard about issues in academia where you might be working for an employer and any work you produce during the working hour becomes the property of the university or more broadly perhaps other employers. You talk about steps that employees should be aware of and be careful of.
You should raise with the university the issue of how to release the work before you finish it. So, for instance, if it's a program, I recommend that when you have it sort of just beginning to partly work, go to the university administration and say, if you agree that we can make this free software, then I'll finish it. Otherwise, why should I? I'll just get it vaguely half working enough that I can write a paper about it, and then I'll drop it, because if it's not going to be free... On the other hand, if it's a scientific paper, what should you be trying to do? You should be making sure that it is released to the public with permission to redistribute exact copies. And the university will probably be happy to do that. So what I suggest is, every university should say to its staff, if you publish scholarly works, we reserve in advance the right of second publication on the net with an open access publishing. And open access basically means people are allowed to share it. People are allowed to redistribute copies to mirror it and so on. Once that's in the contract, then when the journal sends you something to sign to give them all rights, well, you can sign it, but the university still has the right to publish it in accord with their prior contract with you. This is the way of defeating the journals that try to crush the distribution of scientific knowledge, that are essentially obstructors that we have to get out of the way.
I'd like to just throw out an analogy that I think might help illuminate that basic question of the lack of motivation to do things if they have to be done in the context of freedom. I spent many years living communally where we tried to use a consensus decision-making process, and there were constant objections that, well, we can't wait for a consensus to emerge because we have to make this decision now about whatever because this is so important. And the answer was no. If we can't reach consensus, then that's not something we need to decide on. And we just wait until we can reach consensus, and the decision just doesn't get made until then.
Yeah, well, of course, there may be some opportunities that exist only for a certain period of time, and if your commune operates by consensus and it can't reach a consensus to take the opportunity, it'll go away. That's not necessarily the end of the world, right? If they don't have a consensus that they should take that opportunity, so they don't take it. But that doesn't mean you die. It just means that you don't do that particular thing.
I want to compliment your personal effort and journey with GNU and Linux very highly. At the forefront of this new concept and new functional tool available to our civilization called software and mechanical interface with the computer. And I understand and appreciate your personal frustration, clearly, that the predatory capitalists at Microsoft and other equivalents have manipulated this evolvement, technical and mechanical, and that's frustrating to other creativity as well as the predatory capitalist aspects to it. But frankly, haven't we evolved the patent element, the copyright element, and the antitrust laws, and a reasonable term for the author-creator to be rewarded in the case of artistic content, the lifetime plus 70 years to his or her heirs? Why is that, Mr. Stallman, so unreasonable, a combination of balances?
I don't believe that balance is the right goal.
Why, sir?
Because the only interest that we want to serve here is the public interest. The public interest shouldn't be balanced against any other private special interest in copyright decisions. Copyright should serve the public interest, period. Now, that doesn't mean that we should have no copyright, because you can to some extent serve the public interest by having a copyright system. If that leads people to make more art, we the public may feel that our interest has been served by having a copyright system. But the existing system wasn't designed to serve the public interest. It was what the publishers wanted, and they wanted total power over us. And it's clear that what we want today is to be able to share our share the public works that we have copies of over the internet. And tens of millions of people do that, even though it's illegal, because it's so useful and so helpful. So it's clear that today's copyright system is out of step with what we, the public, need. And there's no reason to be surprised about that. There's nothing about its origin that would suggest it had any, it was ever intended to serve the public. Not the details of as they exist today, because they were chosen under an undemocratic corporatocracy. There's, in a system where laws are sold by Congress, there's no reason to presume that the laws that are passed were passed because they're good.
I fully agree with that, and personal observation in Washington, D.C. verifies the accuracy of your statement. But again, how do we make the system function where the creator and or inventor or software developer is adequately rewarded and yet still the ongoing public interest is served?
Well, I've already told you how... Please.
Go ahead.
You're asking me to repeat what I said, or you're just saying you don't believe it. Well, what can I do? You don't have to agree with me.
Clarification, how did you pick 10 years, for example?
10 years, I picked it because it's considerably longer than the publication cycle, which means, you know, if most books are out of print in 3 years, 10 years is comfortably longer than that.
Not everything is books.
I know, but most movies disappear after much less than 3 years. Most records are out of print after 3 years. I think you'll find that that's true across the media. Most works disappear in much less than 10 years. So that's why I picked 10 years. I'm not claiming that this 10 years number is the right number. I'm only presenting it as something to try. As the next attempt, you know, clearly lifetime plus 70 years is ridiculous. So we should shorten it a lot. I could pick 10 years out of the hat. You know, the fantasy writer said he thought it should be 5 years. I'm not going to argue he's wrong. I'm not trying to claim I know the exact right best length of copyright. I'm saying let's shorten it to a reasonable length of time. 10 years seems to be in the right ballpark. We could adjust it afterwards.
There's something I've been kind of visualizing over and ask you about. You said at the beginning of your talk that like you brought up the example of copying a chair, that we don't have a way to copy a chair, that the four principles don't apply to the physical matter. But that's not true anymore. And
well, it's still almost entirely true.
Well,
we don't have any machines to copy this chair.
Yeah. you've read about the Fab Revolution and the top stats.
It's more potential than real. Someday, we may have personal nano machines that will make whatever we want.
Laser cutters have become sufficiently advanced. In fact, there's a company already that's had a lot of success that's in New Zealand called Fonoco. And their company policy is you go onto their site, use their free software, design anything. Right now it's limited to wood or other materials. If it can be cut with right now there's two-dimensional printers, then right now they will cut it, or anyone else that they have credit has a printer can cut it, and you ship it off, and you buy it, and then you can use it.
Well, I haven't encountered any of this, but theoretically it's conceivable that we'll have a world in which we can all edit designs for physical objects and then make the physical objects, and then then it would start being important to have free designs for these physical objects that we could share, improve, and use. I haven't seen any of this in my life. I think you're exaggerating when you say that what I said about physical objects is not true now. These things are experimental. But with time, it may change.
So you think it's not?
I think
think convergence could apply to.
I think it's not relevant to our lives today, but in the future that may change.
I was taking a look at some of the different ebook readers, and I was noticing that they seem to be priced at around $200 or so. And that's probably less than the hardware costs. They're probably guessing that people are going to be buying a lot of this DRM ebooks. And a lot of them also support PDF and other formats that are unencrypted. So I was wondering what you think of the idea of buying lots and lots of ebook readers and then using them to read, like, Gutenberg and other freely available.
I really don't think that. Hackers often think of very clever indirect schemes which they think are going to make a system implode, and I just don't think that they usually work. What I think is, if you try to convince a lot of people to buy these readers, I suspect a lot of them would then give in to the temptation to buy some of the DRM ebooks. So I think we're better off if we make them fail.
And don't forget about Moore's Law. Things get cheap real
quick. Yeah, I actually have two questions. My first one is, I really support Underdog. And I was wondering about that band you got with Three Bloods that you were talking about, because you're like getting my support.
Oh, I believe it was Will Shetterly.
Okay. And my second.
And I actually read the book that he got the award for, and it was nice.
What was that?
Cats Have No Lord.
Okay. I've actually read that. Okay, my second question was about your views on copyright limits on specifically application software, as in word processing, video games, things like that. Things get outdated so fast.
Well, as I said, I think that all these practical work should be free. But video games are a bit of an exception because part of that's art, so they could divide it up into the engine and the art. And the art would have a 10-year copyright if they divided it up that way. I think it's, you know, it's so late now, it's been 2 hours. I've been doing questions for 40 minutes, 45 minutes. So I think I'm going to call a halt now, and happy hacking.